Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we're getting into a conversation about the world of sports and entertainment, on the African continent and also within the global context, talking about the rise in demand for sporting events locally and the economic impact thereof, and, just going to be having that discussion, with the team from Oliver Weinman. I think the last conversation we had with this firm was around what was going on in the aviation industry, so very happy to be talking today about sports and entertainment, and we have their global head of sports, that's Tony Simpson, who joins us from London for what looks to be a really great discussion. Tony, greetings to you today.
Good afternoon, morning, and evening, wherever you are. My name is Tony Simpson. Really nice to have you, and thank you for having me on your show, Madhu.
So, a couple of things before we begin. I think Oliver Weinman, we do understand, at least, from my exposure to the firm, boutique consulting, consulting firm, with a global presence in a number of, various countries. When we say that you are the global head of sport, what are you looking after? What's under your purview? What are you spending your days, worrying about in the Oliver Weinman universe?
Well, thank you. Great question. But before I go back to that, we're actually not a boutique firm. We're a $3 billion business, and we're one of the largest in the world. Look, I just spent a week in New York working with clients as broad as the Major League Soccer, NFL, Major League Baseball. But we also work with Europe's biggest soccer clubs, leagues, federations. So for us, sport is really important. And last year, we were heavily involved in the NFL expansion into Africa. So sport for us is predicated on private capital, it's predicated on governance, and it's predicated on mass participation. And all of these are needed to be done properly to make sure we've got the right financial infrastructure into global sport.
No, of course. And I do apologize for the boutique reference earlier on. My understanding of consulting firms is that if you're not one of the big four auditing firms, that's one block, and then in another block they have the McKinsey's, the Bain's, the BCG's, and then for some reason the third block
we're in the second block, so
yeah.
But thank you.
So when it comes to, I guess, what you're looking after, for me, I'm particularly interested in this space because I look after, technology, media, and telecoms in our space. And, one of the things that I was keen to get your sense on is, I think in this part of the world, we take for granted what MultiTrace has been able to do with, with SuperSport. Having a platform that has that many sports rights underneath it, because when I look, across the universe, if you're in the States, for example, if you want to watch the NBA, then you need to be doing it through TNT, maybe ESPN. But if you want to watch baseball, maybe ESPN will have some of the rights, but there's also Apple, there's Fox, there's, all of these things that, if you want to have like a broad, view, at least from a viewing point of view of, sports, you have to have all of these subscriptions. So that's what I wanted to, I guess, in the first part of today's discussion, maybe pick your brain, to say, how have you seen, the development, at least on the viewership side and, consumption, because that is a big part of what drives sports around the world, is the amount of money that is flowing through, broadcast rights. And this is leagues across the world. It's not an SA thing. It's not a Europe thing. It's across the world. But those consumption habits, I'm sure they are hurting some pockets, but they're also benefiting other pockets as well.
I think the rights in the world, if you like, on traditional sports in North America, like baseball, like basketball and NFL are driven by subscriptions, and they're driven, and a whole of those industries are driven by subscriptions. Africa is really different. So Africa has, as you know, one of the youngest demographics in the world. People are actually consuming sport in Africa via phones. Really interesting. So the model is going to be totally different. And not only are they driven by phones, but they're subscribing them via light and heavy apps. So people, and you'll know this, in Africa, which is a population of 1.4 billion, which dwarfs actually Europe and North America. So the models that the sports organizations are going to have to use in Africa are going to be very, very different. When I say the models, the commercial models. So if you look at how people are consuming soccer and football in Africa, they're using highlights that are coming from telco companies. They're getting goal highlights, but people aren't watching the whole games. They're choosing to watch what they want to watch when they watch it. Interesting enough, if you go for something like a World Cup final, Champions League final, African Cup of Nations final, people will then start to look at, may watch the whole game and subscribe to that and pay for it. But ultimately, TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook Lite are how people are consuming sport in Africa. So the model is different, but it's a much bigger piece of cake. So I don't think the traditional way of measuring the valuation of sports in Africa, and also I'd say for Southeast Asia as well, is going to change. And if you like, if this was oil, you talked about energy last time, in many ways we're at peak oil in terms of TV rights in Europe and North America. What's happening now is it's consumers pulling down content rather than the broadcasters broadcasting it, which is a really unique model, which is why Africa is so interesting.
As you were talking, I was reminded about the fact that about a month and a half ago, in this part of the world, the major streaming platform is Showmax. They have, relaunched themselves in partnership with NBC. And as part of that rebrand, they've now offered, something that hasn't been done anywhere else in the world. They went and they partnered with the English Premiership, and they've launched a mobile only, subscription where a person can consume a game. And I remember there was a presentation, a very brief one, and the CEO of the English Premiership was actually saying that they don't offer, such a plan anywhere else, in the world. And I guess it speaks to that consumption, trends that, that you're talking about. And I'm now just wondering, where the opportunity is. Is it in, maybe getting more and more of those sporting leagues to have such plans? Or is it about, to your point, where we're talking about highlights, where the leagues are, getting a little bit more into the content creation side so that they can, feed some of those, I guess, the social channels. I guess how do the leagues capitalize on those trends? Yeah.
There's a real confluence, merging, coming together of sport, media, and entertainment. So last year, when Tottenham played, when Burner Boy played in Tottenham's stadium in London, it was beamed back with Tottenham Hotspur branded messages to Nigeria. And so you're seeing, and Taylor Swift's and her impact on the Super Bowl, you can see what's going on there in terms of consumption. And if you look at what's going on in Afrobeats, which is probably the biggest music thing in Europe and North America at the moment, and sport, the African players playing out there, there's a whole merger of fighting for screen between music, sport, and entertainment. So I believe, and I think what's going to happen more and more in the Premier League are doing that, is you'll find that people are going to be using a content concept within their phones, within their podcasts, within their media consumption. And I think people will subscribe. But also on top of that, Madara, there's a whole area of shoulder content. And what do I mean by shoulder content? It's seeing players and athletes outside of the game. So what do they eat? What do they wear? Seeing them laughing and talking, seeing them going around having a look at houses, driving cars. This is all about lifestyle. So it's this merger of lifestyle, sport, media, and entertainment. And then the big games are going to be really important. And this is where South Africa wins, because South Africa has the most stadiums. I think you know South Africa has 33 stadiums that hold over 20,000 people in Africa. So you'll start seeing people will go to these events because social media has built up these profiles. And if you look at the role of influencers in life, my kids are in their 20s. 30s. I have no idea who these influencers are, honestly. They suddenly go to a concert and there's tens of thousands of people there. I've not seen them on television. I've not seen them on posters. They're just on social media. And this is what's happening with sports, media, entertainment athletes. So when you go to the game, you've got the African Cup of Nations, there'll be thousands there. But actually, ultimately, the money is made away from the stadium. Does that sort of make sense?
It really does. And one of the things that I'm then curious about, because all of the stuff that we're talking about now has obviously, there's a live element to it, and then there's an online consumption element to it. You know, sports, media, entertainment, a lot of things are happening, you know, for our generations, you know, through the mobile phone. But is all of that action then translating to, I guess, the live in-person aspect? Because you mentioned the fact that South Africa has so many stadiums. And you know, for a sport like soccer that works, but I do know that investment in, let's say, basketball arenas has not been as high, because I think right now probably one of the most up-to-date basketball arenas is what you're gonna find in Kigali, right? Because there's questions about is it worth it to even invest in, you know, such facilities, and all that translates to, are people actually going to show up for some of these live in-person sporting events?
I think it's a great question, but once again, it goes back to that combination of social, actual, practical. So you don't just build a stadium, put a game on, expect everybody to come. It's no longer good enough to say, if you build it, they will come, and put the best food and the best tables and the seats, etc. It's got to be part of a mosaic of activity. And so modern sport is entertainment. There's no accident that Disney and Warner Brothers and all these organizations are involved in sport at the highest level now. And all the brands are as well. Many years ago when I started in sport, I worked with Nike, and they take never mention the F word, which of course we all know is fashion. Okay. Now those brands, Puma, Nike, Adidas, caught celebrities. They caught athletes to wear their brands as well as players. So all of this is part and parcel of the same thing. And so we're going back to the future. And what I mean by that in basketball is, look what Harlem Globetrotters were. And by the way, kids, anyone under 30 won't know who they were. But the Harlem Globetrotters were a fantasy basketball team made up of cartoon characters, yeah? Who then they turned up to, when they turned up to matches, it was packed. They weren't a real team. What you'll find happening now is a combination of that. You know, influencers, stars, and people coming back and creating a real great entertainment venue. Then every now and then you have your high performance games, but no more longer can you have one without the other. Of course, Olympic Games, World Championships, African Cup of Nations are really important at the elite level. But on a day-to-day basis, you have to have the structure for all of your sports to appeal 7 days a week, you know, 24 hours in many ways.
Yeah, most certainly. And one of the things I'm thinking about as you're speaking, Tony, is the fact that we find ourselves in a place where, whilst all of this is happening, right, we're also dealing with a high interest rate environment. We're also dealing with inflation, and I guess, you know, the sports and entertainment world is also fighting for the same few consumer dollars, right, that are, you know, that are out there. So in this environment, you probably have to be, you know, showing some type of value, you know, if you're really going to be appealing to some of the consumers, whether it's for the live events, whether it's apparel, like what you were saying. As you can see right now, you know, from your research, I'm sure you have a lot of data. This fight that I'm talking about, when it comes to fighting for the consumer pocket, for consumer eyeballs, on the continent, as far as you can see, who's doing it well? Africa has predominantly been a soccer type of continent. South Africa is big on soccer, rugby, and cricket. But as far as you can see, are we still just a soccer continent, or do you see the emergence, of other disciplines, maybe basketball or something?
I think, but firstly, if you're looking at Africa, there are only really three sports, and that's soccer, soccer, and soccer. That ends. Okay. But the reason that soccer in Africa isn't the global behemoth it should be is because of poor governance. And what I mean by poor governance is, at the moment, the greatest players in Africa are playing in Europe or they're playing in Asia or elsewhere, not because they don't want to play in Africa. It's actually because there isn't a governance structure in place that allows the investments and the, you know, to pick up young boys and girls at 12, 13 years old, put them through academies and put them into a league and a system that will actually enable them to have a full, a professional and well-paid existence. And there is no reason why that shouldn't be. But I would argue that one of the reasons is poor governance, not lack of governance, but poor governance. And to be even more firmer on that, and I'm really passionate about this, but that is because if you don't have good governance, you don't get money put into football or into cricket or into rugby. And therefore, the private equity and all the big money into football is going into European leagues and North American leagues because there is a governance structure that allows people to, if you like, realize their investment. The minute we can have a governance structure in place that allows the African sports to build on their biggest asset, which is the people, which is the raw talent, which is what everybody is after, we're in a much better place. And it's really interesting. Look at the GDP of the world. You know, America, and to go back to your point on is it worth it? Well, America has a trajectory growth of a GDP of 1.5, if I'm being optimistic, to 2028. And you've got Mexico and Brazil, who between them, probably, and they are growth markets of 2%. Africa has a GDP growth of about 3%, but that's not even. Actually, if you look at Kenya, it's 4%, 5%. If you look at Egypt and Nigeria, 4%, 5%. Even South Africa, which is a mature country, is 2%. You know, so it's a growth area driven by its really unique demographic, which is 70% of the population under 35 years old. And the reason that's important for sport, media, and entertainment, because that is the group who spend 2, 3% of their GDP on sport, media, and entertainment. So they're dwarfing what's going on in Europe in terms of raw horsepower. So now is the time to put that infrastructure in place and that governance in place. So to your point on those stadiums, it's important to build them because there'll never be a cheaper time to build the stadium than now. It'll cost you more next year. But when they're there, make sure that the talent is around within the country, and it's there. I'm talking about the lawyers, the sports management specialists, the accountants, the professionals around this infrastructure are there to provide a sustainable ecosystem for the talent content. Otherwise, all that's going to happen is we are just going to produce great athletes for everyone to fight elsewhere, which is nonsense.
There was a point that you made just now about the fact that African soccer could be a greater behemoth than what it is because, like you said, there are only three sports, in Africa. By any chance, do you have any numbers to help us to contextualize, maybe how big sport is in the world or in Europe or other parts of the world? I'm sure Europe probably has the biggest, soccer numbers, But Africa, I don't know if there's anything that helps us to contextualize, if available at all.
There is, and I thought you put me on the spot here. But what I would say, if you look at, if I look at sub-Saharan Africa, if you like, and if I look at the size of the market, I think you're looking at. If I look at a percentage-wise. And you have put me on the spot here, and I know you can do this later on. And I look at total household income. I think that's the way to look at it, really. I think you're looking at 4% of Africa's money, which is a times 20x, is spent on sport, and soccer is the biggest sport in that. So women's sport in that, I'll talk about women's sport. Women's sport in Europe is looking to be a 1 billion mark, and that's just women's sport by 2030. Men's sport already is 20, 30 billion in terms of, if you look at the values of the all the major leagues in Europe in terms of their media values. Africa would, I would argue, would be at least 10-15% of that. So you're talking billions of dollars. But once again, it won't be evenly spread, but it will be spread in West Africa, South Africa, and North Africa, the four or five key markets, which are, as you know, Egypt, Morocco, Kenya, Nigeria, South Africa. So those will be the key drivers. And I firmly believe that with the right infrastructure, the African Cup of Nations could become, you know, from a global perspective, something as akin to a Premier League. Why? Because of the pure talent. You know, the African Cup of Nations impacts the Premier League now in a way that no other global competitions do. When they have the South American championships or the Asian championships, a couple of players disappear and it's like, well, okay, they've gone. Yeah. Africa, you see Arsenal, Manchester City, Manchester United, Chelsea, PSG, everyone thinking, oh my gosh, when can we get the players back? Yeah. Flip it round and those players playing there with these players coming in, that's success. And so it's a major opportunity. And I think people just need to understand this from a soccer perspective. It's a major opportunity. And I'm passionate, as you can hear about that. Whilst I'm West Indian, my ancestors are from Africa. And the reason I'm saying that, Mado, is because I don't want Africa to be at the behest of other parts of the world. It now is the time to stand up and own the greatest asset it has, which is people, its talent, and its infrastructure.
Mm. One of the things I'm most curious about, because like you said, you're clearly very passionate and you've probably looked into a lot of this stuff. When it comes to actually moving the needle on the factors that you're talking about, you know, governance being one of them, obviously, there are a lot of areas in which we fall short when it comes to governance. But what moves the needle, right, on some of these things? Is it making sure that governance let's take AFCON, for example. You know, is it governance, you know, at the AFCON level, you know, that helps us to move the needle on these things? Is it governance more on a each country level, where you're looking and you are engaging with, I guess, governments to at least, you know, make sure that the sport, that the soccer leagues in their countries, you know, are doing well? I guess it's a big question. I'm asking one of those, you know, huge types of questions. Yeah.
It's a huge question, but it's the right one to ask. I think to your first point, it has to start at AFCON. And why might governance not be working? I think it's down to a good governance structure is about who is doing what for the right reasons. So it's not about tenure. People shouldn't be rewarded for being there the longest. People should be rewarded for being the right people. There should be proper independence, and people should be afforded to be challenged. You know, if the board are full of people who are all over 55, there's something really wrong about that, because they won't understand how people consume the sport. We've already talked about how young people are using social media and driving that interest in sport in different ways. If people are sitting around a boardroom and don't know the value of their own rights, we're leaving money on the table. You're leaving money on the table. And then you're looking at where the women's games are, especially in football, are doing, because women's sport is growing rapidly. And once again, now is an opportunity for Africa to, Africa should be winning a Women's World Cup reasonably soon with the talent that's on in the continent. But it's making sure these governing bodies are structured in a way where women's football has the right vocal view and the right voice within the infrastructure in terms of investment, in terms of pitches, in terms of making sure that young girls are to and from training pitches and picked up afterwards in a way that boys don't need to worry about. And all of these things are critical. So governance is really important, but it starts at the top, and it starts with presidents being secure enough to say, actually, am I the right person for this job? And so somebody, a good governance structure, I guess, involves people being involved for the benefit of the organization rather than projecting their own interests and their own tenure. And it's a difficult thing to do, but if you don't do it, it's not going to change anything. And the right people need to be recruited to do the right jobs. I know it's a bit of a broad answer to your question, but you know, I can't be too specific. So I don't know the specifics in the region, but everything starts with governance.
Yeah, it certainly does. And like we said, we are accepting that, you know, these are big questions. You know, that we're asking, you know, I guess it's one of those, you know, how do you eat an elephant, you know, types of questions. I want to drill down a little bit, you know, on maybe two things before we end off. The first is you've made the point about the rise of women's sport on the continent a couple of times, you know, through this discussion. And there's a lot of discourse around that, you know, in other parts of the world. One of the more famous debates is the one around the WNBA and, you know, the fact that it's a male subsidized league that hasn't, you know, done well. Do you see those same dynamics at play, you know, here, or, you know, do you see, because obviously, like you noted, there's a huge growth, you know, in women's sport on the continent. What's helping to drive that? And, you know, are we at risk of some of those failures that we've seen in other parts of the world?
Firstly, hugely at risk of some of those failures that you've seen in other parts of the world. And I'll go back to the governance and the people running the structure. You know, in many ways, you need somebody at the top of the organization who is totally female and women-centered and centric. 50% of the population of Africa are women. That's a fact. Okay. So if we start with that fact and say, okay, if we love soccer and football, though, don't alienate 50% of the marketplace. African women have the right and should be playing on a global stage with the right kit, the right training, the right nutrition, and the right infrastructure and a safe environment to play. So this is, by the way, in no means perfect in Europe and North America. But what I can say, and you mentioned NBWA beforehand, in different sports, you know, women's soccer is probably the fastest growing sport in the world. It's probably the most easily accessible for African football at the moment because the barriers to entry are pretty low. You're not having to spend hundreds of millions on players. You've got the players there already. And you've got the clubs and infrastructure. And I believe that from an African perspective, I would be putting, you know, if I was the African sports federations, I'd be putting a lot of money and effort into women's football. Why? Because it empowers girls. It's great for society. It's great for education. It's great for health. And it's great for mental well-being as well. So it's a really good, the net values of women in sport is a triple bottom line, and women can't do it on their own without allies. As you can see, I'm a middle-aged male with graying hair here, and all I'm doing is talking about women passionately, because if I don't talk about it, nobody else will at this level. And it's really important that women's sport is positioned where it rightly should be, alongside the men's game, not as a subsidiary or a secondary part of it.
And I guess going forward, it will be interesting to see how some of those, you know, some of those factors evolve and develop. You know, one will hope that, you know, the audiences, you know, will also be growing alongside those sports. And as audiences develop, that there's greater accountability, you know, on some of the governance structures. One hopes, you know, like you said, none of this stuff is perfect, but one hopes that as audiences grow and the sports themselves grow, like, you know, soccer that we're talking about just now, that we will have, you know, greater accountability on leadership to actually make sure that the right structures are in place to make all of that happen.
Look, the key driver on all of this is, whilst we like it, is revenue and the commercial opportunities of sport. That's why governance is important, not only for the reasons we talked about, the infrastructure of the game, but in order to build a sustainable sport, media, and entertainment ecostructure, the investment organizations, whether they are companies, whether they're private equity firms, or whether they are sports sponsorship partners, need an environment that is stable and the money can go in and deliver to create a better and better infrastructure. That is why governance is important. And so, to your point in terms of the broader picture in Africa, I think that it will happen, but it may take a bit longer than it needs to take, and there will be a lot of pain, I think, because people are going to have to put themselves in uncomfortable positions and be vulnerable and I don't know whether people are prepared to be vulnerable, but people won't be vulnerable if there's money on the table.
Of course. And I like the fact that we are on the money discussion, because, you know, that was probably, you know, the big point, the second big point I wanted to touch on, to say, currently, when it comes to structures, right, we often make a distinction between, you know, the stage at which a particular industry or a particular discipline is at, right? So, if we look at if we're going to confine our discussion to soccer, we see that in places like Europe, there's a lot of investment in soccer from, you already mentioned, private equity players, you know, investment houses, particularly from the US. You know, we've also seen a lot of action from some of the sovereigns in the Middle East and, you know, some of the Gulf states. But when we look at where we are now, you know, here on the continent in Africa, have we reached that stage yet where we can bring in some of that private equity money, or does the sport need to reach a certain stage first before you can, you know, start to allow some of that outside investment?
It's all about governance, unfortunately. Once again, I sound really boring about this, but I work with those.
We should have said that we're having a discussion about governance today.
Once again, look, if we were a bank and we were talking about bank regulation, nothing happens. People don't open a bank. People don't go to a bank without the right governance structures to look after your money, to hold your money, and the right contracts around it. And we're talking about billions of dollars of sports investment. How can we do it when we have an organization where somebody's voted on by a cousin or an uncle to be president of a sports organization? It's utter nonsense. And the only people who don't benefit from that are the players, are the infrastructure. So all of those private equity companies, all of those banks, all of those sovereign wealth companies in Africa and North America are looking at Africa, and they can't see past a flimsy governance structure, both at macro level and at micro level. It could be fixed reasonably easy. It's not rocket science, but it's about people taking a long-term view and understanding this is about the good of the game, not the good of themselves. And that's why, you know, it's quite tragic in the short term, but it's very easily fixed. And the first country that do it, and South Africa is much way ahead of everybody else, I would argue, in Africa to do this. The first country to do this and create a league where there is clear, opaque and transparency around the investments that go in, how teams are operated, men's and women's teams, you have a proper fan engagement strategy. You're creating an ecosystem that people want to invest in. But the problem is you can't play yourself all the time. So when you come into the African Cup of Nations, you want to make sure the prize money is there. And if the prize money is there, it retains the players because they want to stay and work within their ecosystem. It draws other teams in, and other teams want to invest, and other investors want to go into that model. So it's about starting now, but I believe believe firmly that two or three sparks will create a system where absolutely Africa can be a behemoth within global football. But it is about building it on a solid platform.
Of course. I think that's a good place for us, to end, particularly the Africa discussion. We've spent quite a bit of time on that. But as a last point, you obviously have, good insights on what's going on around the world. You started off talking about how, you were engaging with some of the sports leagues in the US earlier on. Globally, money flow, where's the money going? Is it still in the, the traditional big sports that we know? I think we know that soccer is probably one of the biggest, if not the biggest, sports discipline in the world. Is that still the case as far as you can see globally? Where's the money going?
Soccer is by far the world's biggest sport, and it's got its tanks firmly set on North America now as well. With a World Cup coming there, Lionel Messi's there. You'll start to seeing the Latin American countries bringing players into the Major League Soccer. Europe, it's getting better and better. The product's getting better. I think you'll start seeing FIFA getting hugely involved with club soccer as well as international soccer. The rise of players as influencers is going to get bigger and bigger. And I think in Asia, it's getting bigger as well. So, and as you know, in Saudi Arabia, they are looking at developing and driving a new professional league as well. So the winds are changing with soccer, but I do believe that basketball is going to be a close second globally because the barriers to entry are a lot less. But don't forget, esports is going to be much bigger as well. And esports is something that's really new. And then underneath that, things are changing in tennis. People are playing paddle now, which is very easy access to and things like this. And you're starting to see, I believe that cricket and the rise of baseball, probably in Asia. When I say Asia, in South Asia, that's home for Major League Baseball to expand into if they want to do that, as well as Japan. So I think there'll be a global sport, which is soccer, and then different sports will have different secondary areas, and that will be culturally led. As we know, cricket is a big sport in South Africa and England and Australia, not so big in Nigeria, and certainly not very big in Morocco or Egypt. That makes sense?
Go on. No, it definitely makes sense. One of the things I wanted to, you've brought it up, so I'm just going to, ask the question. What paddle? What is going on? Because all over the world, I'm just seeing, because when you're online, you see so many people are engaging in paddle.
Yeah.
When I am in, here in South Africa, we are seeing so many paddle courts that are just being built all over the place. Like sports clubs that would traditionally have normal tennis courts, maybe a driving range for golf, maybe a soccer field. Now there's a paddle court.
It's insane. Look, if I tell you, I was talking to somebody at one of the big football clubs in Europe. They're telling me the players now don't play golf after a game. They've insisted the club build paddle courts at the training ground. They're all playing paddle. Is the fastest growing sport in the world at the moment. It's unbelievable. I was in America last week. All people talking about were paddle courts. You can't book one. And you're right, your country clubs, your golf clubs, your cycling clubs, whatever, everybody's playing paddle. And it's because it's a low barrier to entry. You can play it at virtually any age. It's social and it's healthy and it's good fun, which is what sports should all be about. Mm. It's interesting, isn't it?
Are we going to see some major league paddle,
You know what? I'm sure we will. I'm sure we'll see rights for paddle coming forward soon. We'll start seeing influencers playing paddle. We'll start seeing courts, the World Paddle Championship sponsored by Oliver Wyman, who knows? But it's a really interesting space.
It is a very interesting space. Probably a great note to end on, because as far as I can see, there's no proper established leagues. All the leagues that I hear about are all social, and all excitement is on places like social media. And I just wonder, Like, we spoke to the whole day today, we've spoken about governance. There is no, as far as I know, there's no governing body unless they're coming up and I am not yet aware of them.
That's a great thing, but it goes back to two things, really. And one is, sports ultimately is a very simple thing. It's for the enjoyment you play as athletes. Football, at one time, it was, when I was younger, I loved playing with my friends on a pitch, on a park, we play. That was it. There's no governance. We play because we love the game. It's only when billions and trillions of dollars worth of money comes into the sport, you need a governance structure. And so padel is at that infant stage now where people love the game and are playing it. I can assure you, in 10 years' time, if $10 billion goes into padel, you and I will be talking about the governance of padel and making sure that the people running it are doing it properly. Unfortunately, soccer, football, and basketball do not have that luxury. They have to pay the bills.
So that's where we end off. It has been a really great and insightful discussion talking to Tony, who's been joining us from London about the state of sport. We spoke quite a bit about sport on the continent, spending quite a bit of time talking about football, soccer, depending on where you are in the world and what word you use, for the game in which, 11 people on each side are trying to get a ball on the ground to the other side. Talking quite a bit about governance, I think that's the thing that we spoke about quite a bit, and it's one of those discussions that lets you know that so much hinges on good governance structures, because good governance structures will help to pull in audiences, make sure that sports rights are monetized properly, also make sure that players are taken care of properly, make sure that there's more equity that's taking place, between different sporting leagues, and also making sure that I think one of the other things that he mentioned is that the game of soccer could be at a much higher level, than it already is, because it's already a huge sporting discipline on the continent, and the amounts that people are spending per capita are higher on this continent than in other parts of the world, which shows you that there is a lot of money that is chasing, this particular sport, but, behind it, where the governance structures are lacking or not doing what they're meant to, then it stifles, that some of that growth and that development. And you do see it because there's huge contribution from the continent, into European leagues. And when an AFCON happens, he made, quite an excellent point to say, that's one of the times that actually affects what's going on in Europe, because there's so many players that have to return here. And, we speak about, how to keep some of that talent on the continent. And part of it is making sure that you have the money behind the sport. But to have the money behind the sport, the money needs to feel like it's safe. People that make capital allocation decisions usually look at where the money is going to go and who's going to be looking after it. So if the governance structures aren't in place, then we can only hope and pray that some of that money is going to be there. And then we also spoke quite a bit about the fact that women's sport, particularly soccer, has just been on the rise. But once again, governance, and also just ending off, just talking about some of the other big sports that are coming up. Obviously, once again, soccer is the big one in the world, but he did mention the fact that he thinks basketball is going to continue growing around the world because of low barriers to entry. And then we spoke quite a bit about the rise of padel, and hopefully, Tony and I will be able to have, huge 10 billion plus discussions about padel in the next 10 years' time. So that was it. We were in conversation with Tony Simpson, who is the global head of sports over at Oliver Wyman. Tony, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you, and thank you for having me. Really enjoyed those conversations.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter. We're hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.